Nosotros no vas a ir. According to the program, the Energy Efficiency Leadership Network. Am I correct? But I see the National Energy Efficiency Agency on the floor. That's fine. It won't take them away. You can just say, welcome, Mr. Menier Nasik, with your different hat. Compliments and everything. Anyway, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and good afternoon to Honourable Members and Honourable Colleagues that have joined us this afternoon.
Just touched on that before, there may be just a lapse. I would like a little bit of introduction for those who do not know, because I don't think everybody will speak, so it would be quite interesting just to know who is who in the room. I don't want those who have already introduced themselves to introduce themselves. I think if we could get some quick introduction in the back row, the back line, starting with you. Yeah. No, sit down, it's fine.
Victorious from ESCOM.
Which section in ESCOM?
Strategic Marketing, Jay.
Oh, thank you.
John McAldo from ESCOM, 49M Project Manager.
Mr. Sotoma from ESCOM as well. Strategic Marketing, sorry.
Leticia Pinter, ESCOM, IDM Marketing. Lois Bazin, Department of Public Enterprises under the Energy Directorate.
Good afternoon, Chair. My name is Nombini from ESCOM Parliamentary Affairs.
Good afternoon. My name is Kia Pemoremi. I'm the General Manager in charge of Strategic Marketing at ESCOM.
Hi, I'm Monique Doyle from PNG.
Lisa Jennings Boone from Western Cape Government Climate Change Unit.
William Mapota, Energy Research Portfolio Committee on Energy Parliament.
Thank you, Somo Lekani, Department of Energy, Parliamentary Office.
Good day, I'm Viv Darling from Shell Oil Company.
Good day, my name is Muzi Manzi, and I'm from the Department of Trade and Industry in IDD, Industrial Development Division.
Good day, my name is Mahati. I'm also from the Department of Trade and Industry, Industrial Development Division.
Mapelon Bunella from ESCOM, Parliament Affairs Office.
Okay, back to you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Chair. And while I have the floor, I'd like to complete the introductions with my colleague next to me, who I think hardly needs introductions in the energy efficiency space, but next to me is Barry Breedenkamp, Senior Manager in Synergy, responsible for energy efficiency. So, Chair, today's presentation was intended to focus more on the National Energy Efficiency Agency, and given the subject matter, it probably might just be a very short presentation because the Energy Efficiency Agency doesn't exist. So, in all fairness, we've just decided to rather put it into context, first of all, and then to rather focus, as it was, on the Synergy Energy Efficiency Portfolio, which is what has, in fact, happened to NEA. I think before I start the presentation, I think the important thing to note is that what's happening on the global stage and how does it impact upon what South Africa is doing in energy efficiency. Towards the end of 2011, the chief economist of the IEA, Fatih Birol, did a presentation, a very sobering presentation, in which he discussed the role of energy efficiency. Now, if you look at the IEA's projections, when they start mapping out futures and they start looking at the horizons up until about 2050, energy efficiency plays a major role. And unfortunately, the reality is we're not achieving any of the goals that have been set out for energy efficiency. And in fact, the reverse is true in the case of the growth in the coal market, where we've seen that the growth in the coal sector far outstrips the growth in the renewable energy market. So the outlook, in fact, is quite sobering. And when one considers the growth of the coal sector, we find that China, in fact, is probably the biggest culprit. And for those of you that have followed the news the past week, you'll have realized that China is responsible for almost half of the coal consumption in the world, which is staggering. and they're responsible for 87% of the growth in the coal market as well. So the reality is that there's a problem internationally with respect to energy efficiency, and we're no different. And there are many reasons why we are not different. One of them is that financiers don't understand what energy efficiency is. They like to see tangible assets that they can repossess when they need to. They can't repossess energy efficiency unless you've managed to put in place a variable speed drive or something to that effect. So there's a problem. Financiers don't understand energy efficiency. Later on, we'll talk about one of the solutions which has been introduced by the French Development Agency and see how does that impact upon the interest and the level of competency within financing institutions. Another problem is that we have comprehensive subsidies still in place for fossil fuels. That happens throughout the globe, but also in South Africa. Not enough emphasis is placed on energy efficiency, despite the best efforts that we have from initiatives like 49M and IDM and others. And before I continue, Chair, I must apologize for the TMA use in the presentation, which is too many acronyms. So I know you made a point earlier about the acronyms. But anyway, back to the presentation. As I mentioned earlier, NEA does not exist anymore. The reason why it doesn't exist is because we had issues around confusion within the market as to what was SENERI, what was SENERI, what was NEA. And so to circumvent all of that and to keep in line with the National Energy Act, everything has been replaced by a monolithic brand, which is just SENERI. That really takes care of everything. So at this point, NEA exists as SENERI Energy Efficiency. Up until now, we've been looking at various strategies that have been developed by governments and how do they actually impact on the growth of the energy efficiency market in the country. And there's been a lot of work that's been done. And in fact, our colleagues from the department this morning mentioned quite a few of these, so we've glossed over some of them. But certainly a National Energy Efficiency Program for Public Facilities has been discussed today. One of those that hasn't really been discussed is one that's been developed by SENERI, which is a diplomatic energy efficiency strategy. And the idea behind that was to actually involve foreign governments, particularly those that have embassies here in the country, and start engaging them with a view towards greening their own facilities and at the same time assisting governments of, let's say, less developed countries to also be able to green their facilities. So it's a matching contribution that they would make. So for every 1 million rand they would spend on greening their embassy, they would spend 1 million rand on greening an embassy from a less developed country. And so that program has been developed. It still needs to be implemented, and hopefully we'll see the light of day soon. Another important development is, of course, looking at the sector across energy and looking at the skills gap analysis. That work has been conducted already in conjunction with GIZ. Another area that's been covered already is this whole policy mapping exercise, which I'll talk about very briefly. Essentially, it's waiting signature from the minister, so it's not really enforced as yet, but the study has been completed, and we can talk about it very briefly. One of the important things to consider moving forward, though, is that there is a need, a definite need for an alternate energy framework for households in South Africa to deal with the use of household fuels. We've seen on many occasions the continued use of paraffin has resulted in either ingestion of paraffin or paraffin-related burn deaths. And I was, but towards the end of last year, we had our own little year-end function in which we took shoes to a facility called Children of Fire, and it breaks your heart to see little children that have been burned beyond recognition, beyond facial features at all, by paraffin-related fires. And we owe it to ourselves as Parliament, as government, as civil society to do that. And for me, it's particularly sad that today, PASA, the Paraffin Safety Association, actually closed its doors today. That, I think, will leave a huge void in the market. So we don't have a Paraffin Safety Association as of today. Along the way, SENERI has been responsible for assisting government. Our main shareholder, of course, is the Department of Energy, and we work very closely with the department on matters such as the National Energy Efficiency Strategy, as well as the action plan that emanates from that. Also in conjunction with the department is the development of standards and labeling. We've talked about some of the standards, HANS 204 in particular, has come up quite regularly today, as well as labeling for energy efficiency appliances. And we know that that program is well underway and will hopefully also be in the market pretty soon. I apologize if you can't make out the text on the slide, but essentially this is, well, that's why I said it's only the public domain yet, so you're not supposed to be able to read it. But in essence, this is the scope that's covered by the policy mapping exercise, and very shortly it will be introduced by the department. It will actually assist in helping to inform the National Energy Efficiency Action Plan. So in its former guises, NEA, SENERI has been very active in the development of key key projects. Some of them were actually pilots for the country, and a lot of people that were housed here in Cape Town will bear in mind during the 2007 load shedding or blackouts in the Western Cape that, in fact, we had the pilot of solar traffic lights in the Western Cape, and it was done at a time when there was a lot of resistance to the notion that we could actually power traffic lights with solar power, and yet it was done, and we've actually added, as you can see, the wind, small wind turbine. So the program itself hasn't gained momentum. It's probably the subject of a workshop on its own as to why we haven't been able to roll out solar or wind power traffic lights throughout the country. What has been done in a few city areas, in particular in the Sandton area and so on. There have been a few traffic lights that have been retrofitted, but really the program has lost a lot of momentum. Another area that needs attention is what we call the Pumping Energy Efficiency Initiative, which is targeted at municipalities and is really there to ensure that all the pumping-related load, which could come from either water pumping or sewage, could in fact be actually better managed and more efficiently managed. And we trust that this will now be included in the next round of DORA funding, since up until now there hasn't been a funding allocation for this. Along the way as well, and this was mentioned earlier, is that we don't have a means of comparing ourselves to other countries, and I think the chair also, somebody mentioned this morning the issues around China, and how we should be looking at how we benchmarked against the Chinas of the world. And since we are part of BRICS, the big EE project was conceptualized and funded by the Wuppertal Institute in Germany to help us to benchmark our policies, processes, and technologies against the other BRIC member countries. As I mentioned to you in the beginning, it's very important that we start educating financiers as to how to go about evaluating energy efficiency projects and then financing them. And to this effect, the French Development Agency, AFD, has supported the development of a technical assistance facility, which is there to actually ensure that both energy efficiency and renewable energy credit lines to the banks are well supported in terms of technical capacity. So really we have the credit line extended to one or two of the banks, and we're in the process now of putting the technical advisory facility, assistance facility in place. Now, in the area of liquid fuels, this is one of the key areas which has been neglected, sadly. And the reason for this is people are too used to driving to work. They don't understand that public transportation, despite the sometimes inflexibility and the uncertainty around public transport, still represents the most cost-effective way of moving people from A to B. Unfortunately, we don't have a reliable system in many cases, particularly when it comes to train services in this country. So people are averse to using public transportation. At the same time, there are alternatives to your conventional petrol and diesel-powered vehicles, and these relate to hybrids such as LPG, CNG, and even in some cases biofuel additions. So there are alternatives. The question is, why are we not doing enough? In some cases, we don't have adequate refueling infrastructure. We don't have access to fuels throughout the year. So there are limitations, and this is something that CINED has been working with together with in its Green Transport Center. And there are partners like the CSIR, Nelson Mandela Metro University, and others, AIDC in particular, that are now taking this forward with the Department of Transport and the Department of Energy. So there are lots of opportunities, and they don't even have to be on the more harder technology supply side basis. It could be in terms of behavior, and it could be in terms of incentives that actually help people to move away from the larger gas-guzzling vehicles that we currently see in our roads. A classic example of this is the fee-based system, which is commonly referred in France as the bonus malaise system, really, which means the benefit and then the negative of it. And now the idea behind the system is that if you choose to buy a vehicle of capacity, let's say 5-liter vehicle, you will pay a surplus on top of the price. And that penalty is then collected by a central agency. And that amount is then made available to consumers who wish to purchase these smaller, more energy-efficient vehicles. And the scale of that benefit is commensurate with the amount of energy efficiency introduced by the vehicle type. So your electric vehicle, such as the Nissan Leaf, would obviously attract the most benefit, and then lesser benefit for your hybrid vehicles and ultimately your more efficient petrol-driven and diesel-driven vehicles. So this is one easy way of doing it. There are lots of other measures like that that need to be introduced. So a consolidated campaign around this needs to be promoted, as certainly not enough is being done at present. One of the exciting areas that is now taking shape is under the auspices of the Clean Energy Ministerial Working Group, and I apologize for the acronym, on cool routes, and where CINED has now been appointed as the responsible representative on this working group. And the reason why this is so important is that it's a very low-cost way of actually achieving energy efficiency at the household level. The reason for this is that a specific coating, particularly applied to white paint, but it need not be white paint only, can help to improve the reflectivity. And looking at the benefits, I'll show you that in a second. The idea is that it increases, if one looks at reflection in terms of solar reflectance, and also how long it holds heat, which is a measure of its thermal emittance. And the basic principle to consider is that a white roof will reflect 80% of the heat and only allow for 20% through, while the reverse is true for galvanized roofs. So 80% will actually be absorbed and only 20% will be reflected. So it's a very, very important initiative that should be introduced in a country like ours where we have a large sector, which is in the informal sector, and this is where you can make an immediate improvement. So this has been taken very seriously by the governments that constitute the Clean Energy Ministerium, and so we're a part of that, and we intend to introduce a pilot very soon in Gauteng with the intention of actually demonstrating the value and the benefits associated with cool roofs. Earlier, it was also mentioned about the need to consider the benchmarking and how effective we've been so far, and this was the reason, of course, for the establishment of the Swiss-funded project, the Energy Efficiency Monitoring System, which is going to lead to the monitoring and evaluation system. Our colleagues from the department did mention it as well as Salga this morning. We also host the GIZ-funded specialist for introducing GIS systems where we can actually map every solar water heater that's installed in the country. And it's a very exciting initiative because you won't believe the amount of detail that's been captured in this GIS. For instance, we have ID numbers for people from all parts of the world. I think we have too much information. It might even end up on WikiLeaks at some stage because so much information has been captured, and it's useful because it's talking about behavior, how effective these installations have been. So it's a very powerful tool, and it's being developed to the point where we can actually use it to assist in actually modeling how we should actually roll out solar water heating. We also believe in conjunction with cool roofs that the solar water heating rollout will actually be far more effective. Also, the secure web-based MNV system, that's the measurement and verification system, has been developed for Section 12I. And the proposed Section 12L Income Tax Act incentives. That will allow us to be able to confirm, verify, and certify the benefits that are realized through the projects that are actually approved through these incentives. And just to share with you briefly what the 12I tax regulation does, it allows for a tax benefit which is capped in total at about 20 billion rand. It's been in effect since July of 2010 and will be in effect until either December of 2015 or until we've utilized all the 20 billion rand that's available. It's currently led by both National Treasury as well as the Department of Trade and Industry, and then supported by entities such as SANEDI, although SANES and others are involved as well, together with the key departments like the Department of Energy. If one considers the energy efficiency target, the objective is to realize at least a minimum of a 10% saving in terms of a comparable application, and that's really the benchmark that's been set. And up till now, we have 14 new projects that have been taken through the system. There are quite a few more that are pending, with a total investment of about 22.4 billion that's been attracted to these new projects, and with about 4.13 billion rand that's been committed to SME procurement and support. So a very exciting initiative, and I think well worth the tax incentive that's been put aside by Treasury. And the projection, the conservative projection at this stage, that will produce just under 2,000 jobs. And these are sustainable job opportunities as a result of these 14 projects. Projects are scattered throughout the country. They're in 7 out of 9 provinces. As you could imagine, with Gauteng being the economic hub, that 5 of the 14 projects are housed in Gauteng. But there are other projects that are now starting to take shape throughout the country as well. Another important area is the fact that we need to make sure that there's a crucial consolidation of efforts, that there has to be a process in which all stakeholders are actually brought to the table to ensure a consistent message. And earlier we noted, and the chair in particular, the area of energy efficiency is very fragmented. And so one of the roles that we play is helping the Department of Energy as well to engage with the different stakeholders to make sure that we all sing from the same hymn sheet. And at the end of the day, these are various stakeholders, and we participate, whether it's on the NBI-led leadership network, which will be shared with members in a while, or whether it's through the various SABs, technical committees, or as well as task teams related to solar water heating, etc. So there are quite a few entities that have been established that talk to energy efficiency, and SANEDI participates in these with a view to helping to coordinate a lot of efforts. And then in general, there are some initiatives that are also playing a critical role in advancing energy efficiency in the country. One of them is the SAGEN program. It was mentioned briefly this morning by a colleague from the department. SAGEN is the South African German Energy Program, and it's supported by GIZ. There are a number of initiatives that have been funded out of this already. I mentioned the skills gap analysis in the beginning, amongst other things. Also the GIS, the database system, that's also been put in place. And so through this type of program, we're able to continue to provide an advisory and advocacy role in a number of areas, and those areas are listed. Very important to note that the program brings with a technical capacity from international sources, and those that technical capacity is now available to South Africa in general for the next, probably the next 3 years. And then in terms of our efforts, we have, in terms of production, this is a summary of publications that have been produced, as well as graduates, short courses, etc. And this is done mainly through our Energy Efficiency Hub, which is based at the University of Pretoria. And there have been quite a few students. As you can see, we have currently about 90 students that have been put through the system already, and we have 130 as at the December 2012 that have come through in terms of enrollment in the system. So quite a few high proportion in terms of PDIs, about 49% black and 11% Asian, although I think the proportion of female students, and this is at Barry's request, should be increased dramatically. So there's certainly a need for us to look at overall representativity. So Chair, in terms of conclusions, I think the important take-home messages from our side is that even though we're acknowledging that the need for energy efficiency in South Africa is escalating and the awareness has certainly escalated, and earlier people were speaking about how the market seems to become more receptive to, in particular, buildings, where consumers are now starting to become more and more aware of energy consumption as a determinant when looking at purchasing buildings or houses. It is still a problem in terms of being able to finance these initiatives, and more attention needs to be paid. Certainly the fragmented nature of the industry itself needs to be addressed. And we know the department is looking at that through its action plan, but certainly it remains a problem at this stage. Unfortunately, what it does is through fragmentation, we end up with duplication and wastage. And we see this. We see this in terms of, let's just say, proposed directorates or divisions or departments that are created in an effort to try and address the problem, and in fact leads to duplication of effort. So we do need proper coordination, and we do need the Department of Energy as the lead department, which continues to focus on policy development, which I think is ultimately the key. And then there will be entities like CNED involved, but certainly with our role more focusing on the coordination of implementation of activities, performance tracking, and consolidated national reporting. I needed to mention that within the Southern African context, REAP, which is the Renewable Energy and Energy Efficiency Partnership, has also started to do good work in terms of bringing our neighboring countries into the energy efficiency space. And we host the Secretariat for Southern Africa, so it's encouraging for us to see that South Africans are participating at a regional level, and that other countries in the region are now starting to take energy efficiency more serious, and will hopefully offer value into the South African market as well. So on that note, thank you, Jen.
Thank you very much, Mr. Nasip. Sweet and short from NIA to SADC EE. Okay. The partnership network, are they ready? Oh, sorry, Leadership Network, not Partnership Network, yes.
Good afternoon, Honourable Chair and Honourable Committee Members. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to thank you very much, sir, for the invitation for us to come and present this afternoon My name is Valerie Keane. I'm the Director of Climate and Energy for the National Business Initiative. I'm going to say a little bit about the National Business Initiative shortly before we talk about the network. And I'd like to introduce my colleague, Dr. Peter Mukoma, who is in charge of our Energy Leadership Network and will answer all the difficult questions if you have any. To start with, in terms of just what I'd like to cover and in response to the brief that we received, I'd like to say a bit more about the NBI because I'm aware that some of you may not know much about the organization. Background and profile of the Energy Efficiency Leadership Network, our vision and objectives, our successes, challenges, and recommendations. Now, the NDI has been in existence since 1995. We've actually been involved in many, many initiatives. We are a not-for-profit organization, and we are supported by about 130 leading corporates, both South African and multinational. And we see ourselves as a catalytic organization, one that helps to drive change, particularly in the business community, and particularly in support of sustainable development issues. And we obviously, because we're a not-for-profit organization, cannot afford to do a whole random of sustainable development initiatives. We've chosen ones that are crucial to business, crucial to what's prevailing in the country, and crucial in terms of what we can afford. So a number, just to mention a few. Some of you are aware of Business Against Crime. That was one of the initiatives that came out of the NBI to start with. But we've also been involved in education, schooling support, skills development, enterprise linkage development, and in our environmental portfolio, which sits with us, we've led the work on energy efficiency, on water, and on climate change. And what you'll note when I go through the presentation is that our work is not just driven by electricity or by electricity pricing. It's also driven by the imperative around climate change issues. And I will, therefore, just make a connection to some of the work we're doing under the climate change space. And then as far as the energy efficiency work that we've led, I'd like to refer back to what Chair mentioned earlier when you spoke about the time. We didn't start energy efficiency in 2008. We actually started it in 2006. It was a direct response, actually, to the first energy efficiency strategy, which was promulgated in 2005, and was really in response to government's call for business to support, in the absence of legislation and policy at that time, to support the implementation of energy efficiency. And therefore,
what we have and what she presents are two different documents.
I'm sorry, I just added that one slide. I've added two slides. I'm sorry, that one is not in the one you've got. The rest will be the same. I apologize. Okay. I just realized I needed to tell you a bit more about the background. So I was saying that we've been in the space for some time now. And I'm pleased to say that a lot of the work we started in 2006 has informed or assisted in shaping some of the government policy. A lot of what we see coming out more recently around government policy has been a process of engagement practically between business and government in that regard. And what I'm going to be presenting is the leadership network, but what I want to say was it started out as what was called an energy efficiency accord, which was signed between business and government, and at that time there was an expectation of business to deliver certain things and government to deliver others. Now that that policy context has shifted, we have reintroduced this initiative as the Energy Efficiency Leadership Network. And the members of the Energy Efficiency Leadership Network to date are these members, which is now in your paper. There are 58 organizations, including some government departments. There are a few government departments we'd love to see on board still. And I'm going to explain to you what signing up here for us means. And I think it would be interesting over the course of the year for you to actually go and have a look at some of these companies to see whether they are honoring the commitments that we'll be sharing with you shortly. In terms of the sectors that make up the Energy Efficiency Leadership Network, that's the breakup. I think in terms of who uses the most energy in the country, certainly your industrial sector and your mining sector. And so you'll see proportionately they are the ones represented. And obviously we'd like to get a whole lot more on board, especially if we've got more money to do that as well. The vision of the Energy Efficiency Leadership Network is to be a leading network in driving continuous improvement in energy efficiency. So our expectations as the secretariat to this initiative is to see those companies that whose logos you saw up there taking the lead, showing others how to do it, sharing best practice, and so on. What have these companies committed to? They've committed to, first of all, coming up with a plan for energy efficiency improvement that is supported by an energy management system. Now, I mentioned that we've been running our initiative since 2006, so this is not to say companies have not been doing work all that time. They have. They've been measuring. But what we do have that's much more recent is the publication of an energy management standard. That is still new in the South African market. And what we're expecting now and what government is expecting is that all companies will subscribe to that energy management plan. And many of our companies, while they've been driving energy efficiency initiatives, have not necessarily been doing it systematically. And I think our learning in being involved in this work over quite a few years is that for all of us, whether it's in the public sector or private sector, it's useful to have a holistic, comprehensive plan and not just pick, you know, willy-nilly what we want to do. That we should actually have a strategy, and that's really what this energy management standard ought to be doing for companies. Helping them come up with a policy and a whole leadership from the top-driven initiative to drive energy efficiency across the spectrum of business activities, and not just exclusively, for example, to electricity, but to all sources of energy, as we spoke about earlier. The second commitment of this pledge is companies must set company-level targets that are aligned to their business and aligned to government strategy. Now, again, we know that we're not always going to have business agreeing with government strategy. And I think what we've realized, and I will point it out later, the issue of targets is a challenge. It's a challenge in the sense that different companies use different energy, different volumes of energy, they measure their energy differently, and the proportion to which they can all subscribe to targets, even within one sector, is not necessarily the same. I'll give you an example. You take mining. If you compare platinum with gold with coal, the targets and the measurements and the achievements of those obviously would be different. Of course, what we also want is a report on progress. And we have produced a report previously, but I think going forward in terms of the new structure that we've created, we are actually asking members to assist us with how to report. Because, again, the question of how one measures energy efficiency, what do we want to measure, and how does that measurement and that reporting conform to various requests for reporting. Because currently business in South Africa reports on different platforms. They report internationally, they report on sustainable development platforms, and we do see in the future various government departments requiring different kinds of reports. So it's part of our process to help formulate something that works for business without giving undue and extra burden on the reporting process. And finally, there's the issue of skills development. What we're expecting from companies who are committed is that they will put money, investment, time, effort into developing their own skills as companies and within their value chains to be able to implement energy efficiency. This is a breakdown of what we mean by those different commitments. We talked, and I'm just going to quickly rush through them. Integrated planning I've already mentioned, but we're expecting them to put in practical measures like metering the usage, whether it's vehicle or in terms of electricity, monitoring the use of energy, and seeing energy as a value driver for the business. And I need to say that I think in business in South Africa, we're going to see probably a greater rush and uptake for energy efficiency in the next few years, because at the moment, we are starting to get feedback from companies that electricity alone is making up 40%. Of the production costs. And if it's so high already, without factoring in new electricity tariffs and other price increases, you can see how imperative energy efficiency is going to be. We also obviously drive issues of governance, that at the level of boards and CEOs, energy efficiency needs to be taken seriously. I've mentioned the issue of setting targets. Reporting, I think I've spoken to as well. Capacity building, I just want to dwell on that for a moment. Capacity building, and I think in terms of companies in South Africa, is that there's been other forces at play that have driven them towards energy efficiency besides pricing. And one of them is the issue around capacity, around international competitiveness. There's a project that we run, which is in the slide that I'll be presenting just now, which helps to drive them in terms of seeing themselves from an emissions point of view. And that has actually been quite instrumental in getting companies to do audits for themselves. Let me perhaps come back to that one. We also think, therefore, that companies from that experience and from our current experience need to develop the capacity further to develop baselines and to do proper audits of where they are. That they need help in identifying opportunities. They can tell you about the lights and air conditioning, but as it gets more complicated, they do struggle to identify opportunities for energy efficiency. They also struggle to make the business case. Those that are suffering from the cost of electricity, they can say easily that yes, electricity is a big cost and therefore the financial managers take it seriously. But to decide on a business case on retrofitting a building that's old, which is going to cost a lot of investment, they struggle on how to put that case forward to the managers. There's also a challenge of verification. Our companies are not quite there, and we don't necessarily have all the skills in place to verify information. Then, of course, as was mentioned by Sunetti, there's the problem of funding and financing. Even if it's there, whether people know about it or they know how to access it. What are we expecting from the members who are signatories of energy efficiency besides those commitments? That the CEO has committed a champion or champions within the organization. And it's again a lesson I'd like to share with the public works, that even in all those buildings, these champions, people that are passionate, that will drive that whole change within the organization, because it is about change. That they'll drive and monitor how the company is doing around those commitments. That they will drive the reporting. That they will be prepared to share with us and with others what they are doing and what they're doing well so that others can learn from it, and that they will exploit opportunities that are identified for continuous improvement. And then we have, in return, said to members, what can they expect from us as the secretariat from the NBI? And part of ours is to provide a platform for companies to share good practice. In fact, that is what they say they get the greatest value from, is sharing with each other how did you do it and learning from each other's lessons. Training capacity building, so for example, we are training them now that there is a energy management standard. We're taking them through a training process to help them internalize the strategy of energy management in their company. We also facilitate collaboration, so we are funded partially by GIZ. We collaborate with a number of people in the room to assist in finding solutions. And then obviously, as I've mentioned before, we'll work with them to find what's the best way to report on the energy efficiency improvement. Examples, we have produced a number of case studies, and these we can make available to you for those who'd like to see more details about them, which actually give examples, tangible examples of what companies are doing. But in general terms, companies first have gone for the quick wins. And so for them, quick wins have been things like buildings, fixing, looking for opportunities in energy efficiency for buildings, such as lighting, air conditioning. We've seen quite a few, especially the banks, we've seen quite a few of them taking up photovoltaics on their roofs to power up their own buildings. So they are starting to look for off-grid solutions. What has also been interesting for us is that when we started with the original accord, companies struggled at that time with accessing funding from ESCOM. But we have seen a lot more uptake of funding from the IDM, the Integrated One Management Funds from ESCOM, and they report to us that there's a quick payback for the projects that they are taking through. Target setting in relation to project facilities, we are seeing more companies setting targets. although I need to say that we don't think those targets are necessary for the whole business. What we do think companies are doing is for a particular building, they'll set the targets of 15% or 12%. You do find companies, I'm going to use an example, a company like Imperial Holdings, which is a very diverse business, where it becomes a bit more difficult to set targets because the business is so diverse. And this is, I think, an issue which we need to think about collectively to address. They obviously do things like metering, looking at their fuel efficiency, and I think more companies would do more if we looked at fuel efficiency in our refinery process. But again, we see big challenges in terms of the cost of how we change our fuel in terms in South Africa. And other examples I've seen, we could find them in the energy efficiency case studies or the carbon disclosure project. I want to talk briefly about this project because, again, I'd like to refer to one of the councillors asked the question, how do we compare globally? And I think this is a nice example of how we compare globally. We've been running this project now for 6 years. It's an international project which enlists or asks the top 100 JSE-listed companies to disclose their carbon emissions. Now, it's not just a point of disclosure. It's also about performance. But the initial process of just disclosing is about saying, how are you contributing to carbon emissions in the country? What are your risks and opportunities relating to climate change, and what are you doing about it, and setting targets to do something about it. And what's been interesting in this report, which at least gives us some confidence and measurement to work on, is that many of the companies who have shown progress are using energy efficiency to demonstrate that progress. And why this is important also is that this top 100 listed companies make up, together with Eskom, over 60% of our carbon emissions in South Africa, and of those companies, 75% of them are using energy efficiency as their solution. And top of the list in terms of energy efficiency solutions is buildings. They're using buildings as their way of improving, and behavioral change as well. And I think that's just an interesting lesson, I think, for us to learn from that. And the one last thing I'd like to say with regard to this report is that South Africa for the past 2 years has performed second globally. So we are ahead of the UK 300. They're the only one, we're just behind them. We've beaten all the other samples of 60 cohorts. And why that is important is that it means South Africa at least is prepared to disclose. And we are sitting with the whole database of information about a number of issues, but energy being one of them. We also compare favorably with those samples in regards to many things except the issue of setting targets and being able to implement our project. So the question of what blocks us from implementing projects is still one that has to be addressed. These are the companies who make up the top 100. Sorry, that's not in your pack, but that's an example of the companies I've just been talking about. Not all of them are part of our network. We obviously would want to get more of them involved in the network itself. With regard to challenges and recommended solutions, it's been mentioned before, this is my last slide, it's been mentioned before that baseline setting is a challenge. I think one perhaps has to even unpack that further beyond just saying why we say baseline. I think some companies struggle with scope, they struggle to determine how many buildings they must measure and so on, but a big issue we found at the very beginning when we started working in the space was companies struggle also with data. The energy efficiency strategy still says 2000 should be the baseline year. We did a study in 2008 which showed that out of the 18 companies, big corporates who responded, only 5 of them could come up with data going back to 2000. So we do need to have some agreement on which is our baseline year and what expense should it cover. Capacity building, I've already mentioned, is a challenge. Within the companies themselves, the recommendation would be that companies must have champions. They must have people who can speak at the level of senior management to help make sure resources are allocated for capacity building needs. But I don't think we can talk about capacity building in the absence of looking at the context of capacity in the country. Do we have enough engineers? Do we have enough artisans even who are being trained to know what energy efficiency is about, because it goes right down to shop floor level? if we want to take energy efficiency seriously. Then the question of and coming up with bankable projects. We do have banks who are offering finance, but whether companies can come up with a bankable project that the banks will buy into and give them loans for is a question, and that's another area for capacity building, even within companies themselves. I've mentioned investment in large-scale projects, particularly retrofitting, and we're talking about oil refineries and those kinds of facilities, which would cost huge amounts of money to refurbish. I think those companies who are ahead of the game, that's where they are facing challenges. How do you invest in huge infrastructure change? Measurements and reporting, there our recommendation is that we benchmark ourselves against other countries and within sectors as well. And then finally, with regards to behavioral change, I see that those companies who are successful, behavioral change is part of their success. But those that are struggling, behavioral change is part of their struggle. And it's a question of how do we put talking heads together to make the campaigns work at a national and localized level? How do we change behavior through policies? I think the regulations we've seen coming into play, like building regulations and so on, will help. But I think it goes back to the question of how do you police that? How do you make sure that there's a way to implement that regulation? I think companies would say that incentives, we can still do a lot better with regards to incentives and making sure that we know what those incentives are and that they are easier to access. And companies are looking forward, for example, to 12L, the implementation of 12L, for those that are unable to access the current one. And then recognition sometimes is a very easy thing to do. Just giving recognition for those companies who are doing well is one way to get more people to do well. And the last one is an issue that's been mentioned earlier in the day, that of municipal billing, that we do still also have, from the private sector, have a challenge of whether companies get recognized for their savings across the country. Thank you very much, and Peter and I are available for further information. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
If we could just push until we get everyone so that we're left with the energy efficiency forum. As the Energy Efficiency Forum is coming, I tried to get an international organization based in Paris. I thought we would link them with them by video so that we can have international benchmarking that is now talked about, but it failed. But we'll still try because it's good to be part of the global village. It could have been very helpful to have had that international exposure. Over to you, ma'am.
Thank you. I'm Sarah Ward. I'm from the city of Cape Town. I am the head of energy and climate change. It's a post that has been in existence now for about 4 years, and I have a team that works with me. We were asked specifically to talk about the Energy Efficiency Forum. The Energy Efficiency Forum that the city that runs in Cape Town is one aspect of the energy efficiency programs that the city runs. The other main one is a residential electricity savings campaign. So this energy efficiency forum is for commercial buildings, so it's a very good follow-on from the NDI presentation that you've just had. As you can see from this slide here, the Energy Efficiency Forum is a collaboration between different actors. So there's the South African Property Owners Association, the City of Cape Town, and Eskom. We are the main drivers. It's a public-private partnership. And the city, because it's very concerned and very driven by this whole issue, is the kind of lead partner. and then we work very closely hand in hand with Eskom, particularly around their energy efficiency financial offerings. Just a little bit of background, the city's consumption is of electricity is about 43% commercial, of the electricity is consumed in the commercial sector and about 42% in the residential sector. So we don't have a very big industrial sector, so that's why we focus so strongly on both residential and commercial. All right, and then just to sort of extend that, the kind of partnership that it is, we also include a whole lot of supporting partners. Now, I just wanted to show that because a lot of these partners play an incredibly important role in making the forum successful because they lend their expertise, they give us their databases, they are, in fact, most of them great supporters. University of Cape Town often does free work for the forum. And it really is a fantastic collaboration. So this is how it works. It's a public-private partnership, as I was saying. The membership is built on a networking basis from the databases of the partner organizations and the support organizations. It's very much focused on Cape Town. So, you know, there's a sense of ownership and belonging and that this is being done not only for each individual business but for Cape Town. Do it because you love Cape Town, do it because you know every single business relies on every single other business to reduce their consumption in order to avoid load shedding. So there is a very, it's a very kind of collaborative, cooperative, consensual kind of forum. And we have three meetings a year, and this is at Old Mutual. I should give them a little plug because they really have been great supporters. They have a fantastic center in Pinelands, and it can accommodate the forum. There are two information meetings, and those really basically exclude suppliers because, you know, people get very sort of harassed, I think, by suppliers of product. So it's a kind of safe space for people to really ask questions about technologies, about what kind of interventions to do in their buildings. Those information meetings are kind of network exchange meeting where we have very in-depth discussions on case studies. I'll describe that a little bit just now. And then we have one marketplace, so it's open doors for the suppliers. They can come and show their wares and they can peddle their goods as much as they like at the marketplace. So it seems to work very nicely as a balance. And then we've just introduced the Energy Efficiency Forum Awards. So this is after 4 years of this forum running, we've decided that it's time now, people are really doing a hell of a lot and that we really needed to introduce a system of rewards for them and so that they could really be showcased and we could, as the partnership, you know, give them admiration and support in what they're doing. And it's by the way, it's quite a formal award process. You know, there's very strict criteria. We have M&V crowd from UCT who do the assessment. Very often the kinds of awards that you find in the energy sector in South Africa and globally do not get proper assessment. It's just you just have to put in a qualitative thing. You say what a few little thises and thats about how fabulous you are, but there's not really serious assessment of your achievements. So we wanted this to be, you know, to be pretty serious. So it's a kind of system of reporting in a way, like the NBI was talking about. All right, we get very good turnout, between 160 and 220 participants at each event. We have a database, I've just actually been updated on that, that is 1,065 members. So it must cover a very large proportion of the commercial businesses in Cape Town. There are about 14% new attendees every time, so I presume that will start sort of reducing, you know, as we sort of reach saturation. 95% have expressed. Every time we run a forum event, we put out a survey. So we ask questions and we really try and get people to answer them. And according to that, if you look at them, 95% feel that it's very successful and valuable, and 92% say that they're motivated to make improvements. And we have also asked them how many have improved, and it was also a very high percentage. So now in terms of like sort of measurable impact, all right, obviously for those companies that apply for the awards, we can measure their what they've actually done. But overall, the measurable impact, we can only leadership and the keenness for people to come to the activities. We haven't done research on it, so we're very keen that that somebody in the energy sector, preferably, you know, probably at a university, does do some actual research on it. Certainly, Eskom and SAPOA are of the opinion that Cape Town's commercial property sector is very driven around energy efficiency. In fact, Eskom said to me that they are, that it seems to them that there's a lot more energy behind energy efficiency in the commercial sector in Cape Town than in most other cities in South Africa. I said that we did that spot survey. One thing that I didn't mention is that one of the very particular things that we do is that we provide hand-holding to commercial businesses to be able to access the Eskom financial offerings, the IDM offerings. That seems to be, it's a bit like getting help with your tax return forms. You know you've got to do it, you know you can do it, but you've got to, actually getting to do it is the problem. And so we thought, okay, well, we just need to send out, because quite a lot of the businesses know nothing about energy efficiency. The forms on the Eskom site are not difficult to fill out, but they kind of just need to be held. So we've done that once last year. We employed a company to assist Eskom with it. It's also because the city of Cape Town, obviously, with its the community, has a very good name. And so we thought we'd help Eskom in that way. Sometimes Eskom is not trusted in the same way locally as a city government may be trusted, and certainly as a city of Cape Town government is trusted. So that seems to have been very successful. We are about to do with Eskom an assessment of all the companies that we did approach and did handhold, how many of them actually carried through their IDM implementations. Okay, that's just some information. If you look at what is the impact. I mean, I've told you that we've got a very big residential campaign as well, which is very strongly branded and has very intensive information. But this is, we don't have great data except that we've got consumption data, which you can, this is the City of Cape Town's consumption data. What it shows is that we are 14.4%. Down in consumption compared to business as usual. That business as usual is if we had continued growing from 2007 onwards in the same way as we had grown in electricity consumption for the previous 10 years. So, of course, there's been a recession, and there's also been massive tariff increases. So it's hard to separate what the impact of campaigns is. But I think this is a very good slide. It also it doesn't have sufficient analysis behind it because we know that there has been some sectoral change in Cape Town. We've lost manufacturing capacity and we've gained service industries, which are lower in energy consumption. But look at that. 2008, all right, so there was a recession, a big drop in the green line, which is economic growth. And electricity consumption flattens along with that. And then there's a recovery in the economy and electricity consumption continues to go down. So what we are seeing from that is that there seems to be a clear engagement between economic growth and consumption, which is great. I mean, that really for us is a big indicator, and I'd really love to have better data and analysis inside that. The kinds of themes and topics that we do, we have case studies, as I said. What was very nice is the first case study was presented by Woolworths, and they got up and said, a year ago we would not have shared this data, this information with you, because it would have been our competitive advantage. Now we see we're all in the same boat together, so we're very happy to share it with you. And that has been the ethos of the forum since then. So we have... and also it's that kind of opportunity for these companies to brag. we also give very useful information that's directly relevant to the impact, that Cape Town tariffs, that Eskom tariffs, what impact it's going to have on your business, the national building regs, what the Part XA means for your business, how you must implement it. That's the Part XA of the National Building Regulations is the Energy Efficiency Amendment. So that is one of the excellent things that national government has done in the last no, year before last. So it was 2011 in November, very far-reaching energy efficiency regulations were made. Now, well, I'll come to the challenges at the end, but they really do, they affect all building sectors except for warehousing. So, I mean, they really are very far-reaching. And it's to do with water and insulation and so on. All right, then there's the Green Building Council, also doing excellent work, and they provide information on how to get an assessment and what the assessment tools are like and so on, ESCOM's IDM offerings, etc. We do a lot of awareness raising around certain things like green leasing. We've just done a big session on insurance in a changing climate. You know, this is something that's definitely impacting business. So we're kind of like starting to actually even move out of the energy efficiency realm and more into resource efficiency, which is one of the things that I think we really need to be doing. All right, we obviously talk a lot about new technologies, and then there's the awards. All right, this is just an example of one of the case studies that was presented by the V&A Waterfront. Now, I just wanted to show you here, I mean, this Colin Bevanish, I mean, he is an absolute leader on energy efficiency and just kind of a company leader. And he has very nice basic rules, which I think the NBI also kind of spoke to, but it's the kind of thing that we promote a lot in the Energy Efficiency Forum. You know, and I think that those are good for if you're pursuing energy efficiency, you know, as government, to really understand and pursue those. Make utility management part of the staff members' key performance areas. Set an example. So that's also what the City of Cape Town does. We do a lot of energy efficiency in our own buildings in order to be able to lead by example. Don't try to do everything at once. Have a plan. Base your actions on a sound business case. Pick the low-hanging fruits and then develop a track record so that you can ask for money. I mean, I've been doing that a lot in the city, where I have proof of savings from projects that we've done that I might have done with grant money. And then I say to the city government, look, you know, these are the savings. You must now give budget for staff and for further implementation of savings, because we actually have proof. And it seems to be working. Then report on the savings internally, meter, and then analyze and act. So that is also something that we've not been very good at in South Africa, is measurement. We're also in Cape Town, and I think a lot of the businesses are starting to implement these automatic meter readers, which you can read from anywhere, and you can immediately assess what's been happening. Oh, there's, you know, high spikes over the weekend. Who was having a party in the building when, in fact, the building was supposed to be closed down? Or, you know, you can really do a lot of enormous amounts through energy management rather than changing technologies. And then benchmarking and prioritizing. We, in fact, in Cape Town, we benchmark all our buildings against each other, because city buildings and government buildings are often fairly energy efficient, actually. So there's no point in sort of following something which says, oh, well, you know, which is for a commercial building. You need to see what your sort of medium range is, and then do the buildings above that, and then wait to do the next set of buildings. Okay, I'm not going to go through this, but I just wanted to show you the two winners of this last year of the Energy Efficiency Awards was the V&A Waterfront, and then there's another company I'll show you, but they have achieved a 15.5% reduction in energy consumption. And then Loop Street, the Vanani Properties, which is actually entirely tenanted by the Department of Water Affairs, so it was a good collaboration between a property owner and a tenant. And they've done an enormous amount, and just on the HVAC, they have saved 30% on their electricity consumption. And they're great. I mean, they've been like doing now a whole lot of other buildings, and I'd be curious to know from them to what extent was getting this award. Now, to what extent did it mean that they could, their tenants in other buildings said, oh, okay, we also want to do that. We also want to be showcased. All right, these are some of the challenges and queries. All right, so the one is this implementation of Part XA of the National Building Regulations. So I know for the city, you know, our building management department, they are very worried about their capacity to be able to enforce and also to monitor whether in fact what the overall impact is. And So I would really like to see something like Synergy EE putting some muscle behind monitoring and assessing the impact of Part XA and really understanding where the problem areas are. I think, you know, if we can get XA implemented, we will be doing extremely well as a country. With new build, of course, it's only for new build. Then linking all resource efficiency together, I think that this is something we need to pursue more and more and not separate different resources because they're all connected anyway somewhere along the line. Particularly energy and water have a major nexus, but waste as well. So even in the Energy Efficiency Forum, we're considering changing it to something else, the Resource Efficiency Forum, or maybe it'll just, you know, our next meeting, in fact, is all about water. Then clarity with regard to supply, I mean, I don't know if this is really possible, but, you know, I think that there is a sense in the country that, you know, there's a lot of pressure for megawatts now for savings, but that as soon as Kusile and Maduki come online, that, you know, will that just all be taken off and then there'll be a major drive to get consumption up again. I don't think that that'll serve the country any good at all. Behavior change is critical. And sometimes we overemphasize technology changes. I've just read a report from England that said that, in fact, behavior change is much more cost-effective than technology. Technology change is very important, but that, in fact, behavior change is very cost-effective, and one should never only do one. And then I just wanted to ask about the appliance labeling program, which I'm sorry isn't on here, but I think it's incredibly important. You know, we're really moving into an era now where people get enough information about energy efficiency, but then they'll go and try and buy an appliance in a shop, and there's nothing that tells them whether this appliance is better than that in terms of energy efficiency. And I think that we are really doing a disservice to our citizens without providing them with that kind of information. And then net metering. The whole issue of small-scale embedded generation, that's also, I'm afraid, not on the slide, but I think that it is something that needs to be paid attention to by government because there is incredible capacity for these commercial businesses to put in small-scale embedded generation. Generally, they'll use all the power themselves, but many of them ask if they can feed in, and so far there's the city, for instance, is still working on a policy, working on a tariff, and I think that some guidance from national government would help a lot. And then very lastly, the low-pressure solar water heater program, which has nothing to do with the commercial sector, but really we need some clarity on that. You know, we have been fiddling around with that. We've put in information to the Department of Energy and get absolutely no response whatsoever. Then we get some briefing note which says, that some allocation has already been made. I was told by one of the senior officials in the Department of Energy that if a city got EEDSM funding, then they would not get low-pressure solar water heater funding. I mean, that seems to me absolutely iniquitous if you don't tell the municipalities that that is the case, because then the municipalities can choose. Most municipalities would choose low-pressure solar water heaters for obvious reasons. So I think that, you know, I'm just really raising a red flag about the lack of communication around that area. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Fart. Honourable members, obviously, we've come to the end of the formal presentation, so it's for us to ask questions, clarity seeking, and make a comment. Safe to say, it's striking that amongst the presentations, a very profound and fundamental concept has been introduced, which is the need for a continuum from energy to resource efficiency. Because at the end of the day, that's the ultimate destination, honorable members. But then it's a then it becomes an overall national program. So we'll just focus at every stage in time on energy efficiency. It triggers our minds. It re-socializes us as citizens, as residents, as economic practitioners, and everywhere, such that when you take it in full, you know,
But obviously already, as you know, in terms of water, through the Department of Water Affairs, and even Omaspala, there's a lot that's being done to drive energy conservation. But it's a matter of integrating them, you know, and ensuring that we have. But I think also just to have that mindset that we need to be a resource-efficient society, you know, it's something worth, commenting on. And the department, there are a couple of things that have been raised, and I would love if you could just, at the end, do a little bit of commenting on them. But otherwise, the honored members, let's take the earlier presentations, which were ESCOM M49M, Green Building Council, and the Foundries Technology Network. Yes. Mulot, please kick off.
Yeah, Chairperson, mine is just a broader general comment about possible areas that we can attend to in future. I think it would be important for us to engage with the JSE, Johannesburg Stock Exchange, because the main players on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange are expected to comply with the environment and social and governance policies. And a lot of asset managers currently in South Africa are taking up those issues quite critically, seriously, and so the JSE might be able to share information if we narrow our scope of work and on issues of environment, because from the company's point of view, they will be talking more about the issue of resource conservation, like you said. It'd be much broader, but if you then narrow it to energy efficiency, I think we might be able to get more information, because as they engage with asset owners or asset managers, they are in a way expected to share more light about how they comply with ESG policies, because those policies were initially, I know it from my other life, championed by the United Nations. The United Nations had policies under Kofi Annan, policies on responsible investing, and part of the other institution that I'm leading was a major driver of that initiative in South Africa. So I think it's important to engage with the JSE and get just some feedback from them.
I'm sure Dr. Nasif is listening, and Mr. Braden very attentively, because I think that one of the things they were crazy about, the extent to which, if I tap into correctly, how the financial sector, you know, is rolling its sleeves and getting, you know, more appetite in this area. But in any case, it is striking that the Honourable Mulato is picking that up, you know. It may not be a tangible, but at the end of the day, the impact of energy efficiency in overall investments and returns, in any case, how I hope we can get someone to actually, department to help us to really capture and maybe just take us through that, because intangible as it may be, but it does have significance, you know, in investment or operations or whatever. Okay, let us now.
Thanks, sir. I think most of the presentations have been complementing each other, much more in the line of work in progress. But with exception of one presentation, most of them are still at initial stage of forming, except that one of the green building, you know, your friend, Shepard.
With pleasure, sir. With pleasure. They are my friends. because they are amongst the ambassadors for green building.
Except for them, most of these work in progress that is still at the beginning stage. We will still have to, at some point, get to know how much work has been done, when work has been done. One interesting matter, Chair, is that, and I don't know why I forget which channel that is, which I saw yesterday, that Beijing is so polluted that people go covering their noses. And one wealthy businessman in China has now found a way to turn the unpolluted air. It's sealed. And he was selling it. People were selling, were buying that air from him. It's a new business that is getting into the market in China.
Are you serious, honestly?
I saw that on TV yesterday. I'm not sure whether it was ETV News, EANC or what. ENCA. Or which channel it is, but I saw that surely. Maybe we must get our content advisor and researchers to try and look into the websites and see if they cannot find that. And I got very worried to say, if we are reaching a stage where fresh air is sold, we are getting into deep trouble as a world. So the only other question that I would wish to ask is the question to Soledi or Fragedi about the battery. There's the battery car. There was a lot of talk last year sometime about South Africa bringing in a green car. That car was going to be using a battery. It was not going to use petrol or diesel or whatever. It was supposed to have been hitting the market by last year, June. But nothing happened and everything has gone quiet. I wonder if they can respond to what blocked the car and whether that initiative is still coming or it is an attempt that failed. Thanks, Chair.
Honorable. Failing.
A few questions here. I mean, I think the most depressing presentation today was the one from the foundries, and it just shows what kind of a crisis we seem to be in, and particularly in light of the kind of electricity price increases that are currently going through NERSA, and the effect that that could have on our beneficiation objectives of the country. So I think we all need to kind of take stock of that. It is a very worrying factor, but speaking to the actual presentation around energy efficiency, I see you make the point that, maybe I can actually direct this at Eskom because there's some of these issues around there, because they say that the Eskos are not specialized in metal melting and overcharge. And I think it is a problem generally with Eskos as well. I'd be interested to hear Eskom's comments on this. And I'm just wondering whether we shouldn't in fact be using the CETAs as a way of actually training, using some of the funds in the CETAs to train up specialized ESCOs for those particular industries. It's just one idea that we could possibly put out there, but there seems to be a lack of capacity in ESCOs, particularly specialized capacity, and maybe we need to think out of the box about how we utilize other funds to do that. I'd be interested to hear ESCOM's comments on that. And I see they also mentioned that investment rebates require upfront funding. Now, I'm not sure what they mean by that particularly. I mean, my understanding was that a lot of the upfront funding would be covered by Eskom, so I'm interested to hear your comments on that as well, if you can address it. Because, I mean, to my mind, energy efficiency stuff, it's not an economic problem, it's a financing problem. So if it is a problem of that, then we've got to find a way through that. So I'll be interested to hear the remarks on that one. And then just on the Energy Efficiency Forum in Cape Town, I'll be interested also, I mean, one of the big issues, big problems that I know we encountered before was problems with landlords and tenants. And so while it's profitable for a landlord to take the rebate to invest in energy efficiency, they don't get the benefits, the tenants get the benefits, but the tenants can't make the investment. Is this something that's been discussed in this forum, and how has that problem been overcome? What are the kind of solutions to that? I'll be interested to hear. And I think, I'll leave it there for now. Thanks.
Yes, thank you very much. I'd also concur that the picture painted by the Founders Network is of concern. I must say also it's a pity they left, because I did persuade people to stick around, but if honourable members could be kind enough to still submit questions through the committee secretary, we'll make sure that we do have a follow-up, because already there are signals that this is going to be an ongoing initiative that we'll be doing there, but obviously taking cue from what the department is going to be doing, because one of our important benchmarks is to have the energy efficiency strategy refined, and also the energy efficiency action plan. From my side, the Energy Efficiency Forum, well, it's a pity that we missed another area, the household program that the Cape Town had. It could have been helpful to share that as well. However, my first comment is that you made mention, Ms. Wati, about the reporting that we have facilitated. Now, the question I have, or what comes in my mind, is that the Green Building Report also is reporting practices, the Leadership Network, I'm not sure whether Sanity Energy or Sanity EE or the department is not generating that. Are these reports, complementing each other, or these report practices? Because at the end of the day, if you look at the smart concept and practice, that's what we would like to see, because we would like to have a repository that gives us an overall picture, on consumption on one side, and also on efficiency, even up to the greenhouse emissions themselves. They are an integral part of, maybe also it's challenging us the extent to which we'll be practicing voluntary versus mandatory reporting, something that the department should be thinking of if it's not in your agenda. Applying standards and labeling. Thanks for raising that. The committee visited the Bureau of Standards last year in December. Yes, last month. In fact, and amongst other things, we were very alert to that, and we were quite struck what the department, the Bureau of Standards took us through, and we are very, very firm and clear and even assertive that the Bureau of Standards needs to be supported, in the work that they've done, and also NRCS, the National Regulatory Compulsory Standards, National Regulator for Compulsory Standards, because they are the implementer on the other side. Those are two institutions that have to be, robustly supported one way or another, Department of Energy, when it comes to appliance. I wouldn't just say labeling, both standards and labeling, because every day a new innovation comes in, either a new product or even a refinement of a product. That's very important. Now, something is being raised here, very interesting, which is small-scale embedded generation. Can I get a little bit of explanation of what that is?
Otherwise, it's actually quite commendable to see, even at a local level, how various players do complement and work towards the common goal, that of energy efficiency. But what just strikes me is that it seems in future, honorable members, it would be helpful to also link up with support. Unless the Green Buildings Council can convince us if they work hand in glove with them, which obviously would be very, very helpful. With the leadership network, so difficult to comment because we've already been working with them one way or another. When in June we had the oversight visits around here in Cape Town, the NBI, obviously linked to the network, you know, took us to a couple of its members, and it's actually striking when practically you see how various companies are very much sensitive and keen to ensure that they move into or they embark on technological changes and even behavioral change to ensure that they save. And some of them, they shared with us, you know, the improvements that they've already experienced, to the extent that there was one which was even introducing, alternative, energy source. I think it was moving from electricity to gas. So that's the impact that they're doing. But the only concern I have is that, let me comment about that at the end. I've lost track because there are lots of these presentations. Sanidi energy efficiency. I've been very keen to hear what exactly the former National Energy Efficiency Agency is doing, because it was in staff, then it was shifted over to you, and we kept on asking the department exactly what happened with this agency. And at some stage, what we were told that it's a regulatory agency, supposed to be a referee. That even made me more interested to know what you are doing, but today you are saying you are mainly an advisor and an advocacy, component of SANEDI. I'm sure you'll agree with me that needs some clarification, more so around advocacy. Advocacy to whom? That could be very, very interesting. And if also you could also respond to Energy Efficiency Forum's proposal that you need to assist in the implementation of Part XA. Am I sure? Let me sort. It's called Part XA. Yeah. If you could, I had this query before, but it's even reinforced by that proposal now. That, like, what exactly is your mandate, or should be your mandate? It doesn't mean that the mandate is cast in stone. You know, maybe as we engage, you may find that you need to remold or refine your mandate as an EGEE in particular. The 20 billion rand incentives program, you know, we were a little bit fast on it, and I would be keen to know who exactly is the coordinator. If we just run through it again, I'm sorry, I can't go through this document, because that's quite a sizable amount of money to invest on energy efficiency. I wish I could have had from a couple of presentations here as to how they have tried or they intend tapping from that 20 billion. Honourable members, I think we need to be quite alert from that, even if it means asking the department as a follow up on it. I know it's probably located within DTI. Oh, no, let me leave you to answer that. But it's very, very interesting, because amongst other things, the foundry network, the founders network was alluding to was the difficulty of access to either incentives which may not be there or the existing funding, you know. And once somebody says 20 billion, you know, you then ask them, to what extent are foundries tapping from that? By the way, last year, the Portfolio Committee for Trade and Industry ran public hearings on the impact of the current MIP decree applications, and one of the founders based in Newcastle had actually claimed that they suspended their operations around August because of electricity. So when you start looking at such amounts of money and incentives, you ask yourself, to what extent have they either been unable or missed or whatever in tapping from that? So some clarity would be, you know, helpful on that. Fort9M, very interesting. However, I have a couple of questions. I haven't picked up any focus on just Parliament itself first, because this is an institution that needs to be provoked, lobbied, and even pressurized if need be, to lead by example once again, if I can say that boldly too. I know Green Building Council has offered, I'm sure it's an offer that the chairperson of NCOP and the Speaker of National Assembly will find it difficult to decline. Provincial legislatures, for that matter, municipalities, stroke SALGA, surely that could have been a very, very helpful or even resourceful network, you know, to use for intersectoral collaboration. Now, you had an impact survey on impact research, and you did give that those results quite impressive. But then the uneasiness I have with them, particularly for one of the slides whereby you were able to get results on knowledge, relevance, motivational intention, and behavior, is that are these a result of direct impact of 49M or a cumulative impact of a general awareness campaign on energy efficiency? Because from the first leg of our public hearing, even today, you can see that various and different you know, stakeholders and role players which do their level best in their little own worlds to drive energy efficiency. So to ensure that we are satisfied with the accuracy of the research, I'm sure it would be helpful to have that distinction. Not necessarily that you should share it today, because I know that it was not you conducting the research directly, but it would be helpful to get to know that. Otherwise, we will still, unfortunately, take it with a pinch of salt, because this is amongst you know, the role players or drives which are part of this fragmented world. Will be as a committee, will be quite upfront with that, but with the intention of ensuring that down the line we have, you know, a combinative and a consolidated intersectoral approach to energy efficiency, or whether it's saving or conservation, amongst other things. But the as someone who was there at the launch of 49M, I must say it's quite commendable in any case that you've actually been up to this stage. Particularly, you've been to also my home township in Tanzania. But also, I think at some stage you also made mention of community radio stations. It would be good if, even if their coverage is still minuscule or less as compared to other, you know, electronic media. But
just bear in mind that, amongst other things, you might be able to reverse some of the bad practices that happen, that take place in areas where the listenership is covered by the community radios, particularly illegal connections, for people to understand how illegal connections are mortal enemies to energy efficiency, as an example. I'll reserve the ones for the founders because, unfortunately, they are not around. The green buildings, I think one can just say that the green buildings, it's good that one has had a better presentation even today, but what we have noted is that the Green Buildings Council's their campaign is that they don't have as much membership as they ideally would love to, but their penetration is growing, and we hope that even those who have been exposed to the Green Buildings presentation for the first time will ensure that the work that they are doing, gets as much coverage as possible, because also this is one area that CSIR also emphasized on, that built environment is quite a substantial user of energy, so if you focus on it, it's very important. And once again, in terms of indirect impact and influence, the buildings in which people work, they don't sleep in them, except the few residential. They go back to their homes, so whatever re-socialization they pick up at their places of work, the prospects of that being extended as a practice to their households, are also great. So it's worth mentioning that your work will not just be confined as expected to where it is focused for now. I know I've said a lot, but let me allow that the various presenters to do their responses. If I can just say, let the Green Buildings Council start, followed by 49M, followed by the Leadership Network, followed by SANEDI, and lastly, the Energy Efficiency Forum. It's fine because it's a long list. People don't have to come over here. They can answer from earlier. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and there were a lot of kind things you said there. I think there was a direct question to the Green Building Council as to whether SAPOA, that's the South African Property Owners Association, should be represented on this forum. SAPOA are board members and were, in fact, founding members of the Green Building Council, and I am happy to accept a responsibility to engage with SAPOA to see whether they wish to be represented directly or whether they are happy to be represented through us. Chair, if I may also say, I omitted in our presentation to in fact say that we have over 1,000 corporate members, so we actually are a fairly large organization. We would love that was a lot more than 1,000 corporate members, but we don't consider ourselves to be too small. Thank you.
Point taken, but also we need to agree, we still have to grow as much as we can. 49M.
Thank you, Chair. On the issue of Parliament, we take your proposal and we'll try and do so. However, we, during the budget speech of the Department of both the Departments of Energy and the Department of Public Affairs, we try our level best to use the opportunity of those budget speech to promote 49M. As far as provincial legislatures are concerned, we have not done so, and we will do so. We will add them in, as part of our stakeholders. I think it's a great proposal, Chair. It's well accepted. The research, Chair, the questions were directed about 49M. However, we do agree and understand that I'm sure they did leverage on the knowledge of the cumulative impact of all other energy efficient programs and campaigns that we have. I don't know whether Peter has anything to add on that. But the questions were direct about your knowledge of 4910 as a brand, and we think that. But I must accept that we must have benefited from other campaigns like Operation Kanyesa.
Good afternoon, Chairman. To respond to Honourable Member Kraling's questions, just on the ESCO situation. I think, as the Green Business Council mentioned during their presentation, certain measures on energy efficiency are relatively simple, and these would be the ones that you'd find in a building environment, such as changing our lighting systems and water heating. That you'd find within foundries as well. There's a significant order of magnitude and complexity jump when you get into actually redesigning an industrial process or rebuilding a furnace or relining a furnace. And this is what they're referring to. There's a lot of ESCOs running around who will change a light to you, but very, very few who have the capability to intelligently advise on how to make a furnace more efficient. It's a hardcore piece of equipment that has to be, in many cases, just basically rebuilt from scratch. I think that's what their frustration is, that they're just battling to do it. There are a couple of advisors, but they want their pound of flesh, unfortunately. They're very expensive, and I think, again, that what they were alluding to in the presentation is those ESCOs don't come cheap. In terms of the comments, maybe just a solution there. I think we do need to invest in better capability, probably at the tertiary institutions, starting from them, getting into engineering fields which build stronger capability to look at the metal making and metrology, etc., as an advanced science more than there are, because there is a shortage. The point about upfront funding, what that's referring to is that in certain cases a project may cost 10 million rand to implement. We use a formula where we look at the amount of energy saving and we translate that into a contribution which we would make from our funds. So, for example, 10 million rand project may qualify for 7 million rands worth of grant funding from us. That still requires a 3 million rand injection from the foundry, and that's what they're referring to as upfront. They're still requiring to take 3 million rand out of their pocket. Even if their payback on that 3 million rand is only 1 year, that's still maybe 3 million rand that they don't have, and that is what they are referring to. We have been working together with the IDC as a way of looking at bridging that gap, whereby the IDC would put in debt into the project. It would be non-recourse, so that it wouldn't affect the overall balance sheet of the foundry, but nevertheless, on a project finance basis, they are prepared to put in debt, and we can then come in up the grant. So over lunch, I have agreed to meet with them together with the IDC, and we'll see how we can resolve this particular situation. Thanks, Chair.
Then, Dr. Nasip, I hope I'm correct if you can comment when I want to speak. If this linked to your concern, because now here I'm a business, there's a 3 million rand shortfall, and I'm sure that with my business going well, you know, why should I go to the financial sector to raise that 3 million? And the question then, shouldn't there be appetite? You know, I'm not talking about business that are on the decline, I'm just talking about business which is going well, but which feels that because of the growing, you know, cost of energy, you know, from 38% now they are beginning to peak 14% to 41%. I want to reduce that, you know. I'm just provoked by what you are saying from what Dr. Nasip had said. Followed by Leadership Network.
Just before the leadership network comes in, can I just chip in into what Andrew has just said? There is a question that was raised by Honorable Kraling in relation to the kind of training that the ESCOs need in relation to the CETA's responsibility. Let me just give a brief that through the solar water heating program, we've got a project steering committee which Department of Education is part of. And one of the key elements that we're looking at is to rope in the CETA so that they provide the necessary expertise that are required within the value chain of the EEDFM. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. I think there's just one point perhaps that I want to respond to, and that was the point made by the Council around engagement with the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. I think if you're looking specifically at energy efficiency, I want to, this report I can make available. I think we can have a link created so that all members can have access to it. But we are actually the custodians of this report that I referred to, which is for the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. I think what we'll need to do, though, is we're going to have to plan to do it perhaps over the next couple of months, is pull out the information, because this particular report is on carbon emissions. But behind this report is a lot of data on energy efficiency. And from this, we could pull out examples of what companies are doing, statistics on savings, and this is publicly available. And so we actually are the custodians of this information together with CDP in London, but based on our South African Johannesburg Stock Exchange. Thank you.
Thank you. Sanedi EE.
Thank you, Chair. There's a few points. I think the JSC issue has been dealt with, so I'm going to park that one. I think one of the questions that was raised earlier was with respect to the electric vehicle, and I think Honourable Members referring to Optimal Energy's Joule, because that was the South African innovation that was proposed. And it's in many ways it's a valuable lesson for South Africa, because in as much as there's enthusiasm for products that are locally developed, and it extends beyond electric vehicles to cell phones, everything else, but everybody says, well, why shouldn't we have an indigenous cell phone? Well, the reality is we can't find a market that big for a cell phone, the same as we couldn't find, say, a market for an electric vehicle. If we had to produce our own electric vehicle, we'd have to sell roughly 50,000 units per year to make it a viable industry. How do you do that in South Africa? You'd have to find an international market for it. The reality is that when you're developing a prototype and a concept, you can spend a couple of million rand to get to that point. When you start producing prototypes that are in the final design stage, you need tens of millions of rands. When you want to go into production, you need hundreds to billions of rands. South Africa wasn't ready for an electric vehicle at this stage, and it's unlikely we're going to be ready soon. And the reason is simple. The rest of the world is moving ahead. So you have to ask yourself, what is the innovative value that we add by having our own electric vehicle when battery technology is evolving so rapidly, particularly in the lithium-ion space, as well as in the case of products where, for instance, Peugeot was set to introduce 3 electric vehicles in 1 year, 3 different models, and Nissan's Leaf is to all intents and purposes already here, and Mitsubishi's Maev is now doing the rounds as well. And in fact, in Japan, they just recently launched a fuel cell vehicle that is produced by university students, which has been allowed on the roads, and it's not even produced by one of the largest manufacturers. So it doesn't seem to be a benefit right now in South Africa producing it, which is sad because we need those type of vehicles. We look forward to probably working closer with the Toyotas, the Nissans, the Hondas, in actually accelerating rather the uptake of vehicles from their own stable. Where there is a gap in South Africa is in the retrofit of electric vehicles. So, and this is something that I mentioned at a previous public hearing, and this is that if you look at vehicles in South Africa, and the point I was making was from India, where they have mandatory emissions testing in India. And I said that it's a form of job creation because every vehicle on the road has to be tested every 6 months. Now, if you compare that to, for instance, South Africa, where we put a premium on the price of vehicles in terms of CO2 emissions, we're considering new vehicles. We're not considering what happens in terms of degradation of the existing vehicles and the higher emissions profile that they produce. So where is the value in actually taxing new vehicles when you're sitting with a bigger problem? We don't have a scrapping age in the country. The average age of vehicles is roughly 15 years. So, in essence, what you're doing is you're creating a bigger problem with existing vehicles than you do have with new vehicles. And this is why it was considered to be a viable proposition to have mandatory emissions testing in the country. It creates jobs. It gets done at a service station. It's very easy to manage. And at the same time, we're actually able to decide after a certain period of time, should we have a mandatory scrapping age? And what happens when your vehicle reaches that scrapping age? Do you scrap it, or do you convert it into a hybrid? and it's very easy. For 20,000 rand, you can convert your vehicle to run on half LPG and half on petrol. You can decide what you want to do. The other option is to convert it to electric. It costs a lot more because of the cost of batteries, but those can be leased. So you can do that, and you'll have a viable, almost sustainable transport at the end of the day. So that type of discussion still needs to be held in the country. But the point I was trying to make about the Juul is that we've learned a valuable lesson, and even though the Juul is now, the program has been discontinued, there were plans at one stage to continue with the development of bus technology, which I still think is extremely valuable, particularly a diesel electric bus in partnership with the BRT system would have been ideal. But the reality, though, is that if the optimal energy passenger vehicle will not continue as it is. And those vehicles have now been transferred to Nelson Mandela Metro University, where they'll be used as part of research, which is unfortunate. Chair, with respect to on the reporting side, I think we fully support the notion that there needs to be consolidated reporting. I think it also fits in with the issues that have been raised around what's being done in different parts, because the NBI produces a lot of data. We have data. The department, of course, has massive amounts of data. One of our efforts to assist the department is in the establishment of what we call the Open Energy Database, or OPENED is its acronym. And that database has been developed in conjunction with the University of Cape Town at UCT, at ERC at UCT. And it's developed by our center called CESA, the Center for Energy Systems Analysis and Research. And the idea is that the Open Energy Database is then managed effectively by the department and then contains all the useful energy information on the supply and the demand side, and is then made available to the public. And at that opportune time, you can pull in the data from the NBIs, the ESCOMs, and everybody else into a platform that is available to the public. It goes a long way towards dealing with the issues that we have discussed already today about the lack of availability of baseline data, as well as on progress on implementation. Chair, you yourself raised the issue around our own role. I'll actually read it to you, if you like, from the mandate, which is very specific, and that in terms of energy efficiency, we have the role to undertake energy efficiency measures as directed by the Minister, increase energy efficiency throughout the economy, increase the gross domestic product per unit of energy consumed, and lastly, optimize the utilization of finite energy resources. It seems very clear in terms of what the mandate should be, but it's not that easy in practice. And the reality is that, as we discussed earlier in the day, it's too fragmented to be able to come through at one fell swoop and to define an open, clear pathway for Senedi EE to operate in that space. And so what it's become is a means of supporting the various stakeholders, yes. But where there are clear instances where Senedi EE can take the lead, those have been taken. For instance, on the tax incentive side, we play a very strong role in able to determine which type of projects are effective and where they should be taken in terms of actually growing the sector. There are other cases in terms of standards development where Senedi EE plays a role in supporting government in development of standards and on the technical advisory side. When you ask me about advisory in terms of the advocacy role, it was aimed at all sectors, but in the particular case of the French Development Agency, it's targeted commercial banks, which deals with another issue that we raised earlier and came from various sources, including from Val's side, is that a lot of the banks don't have a good sense of what it's required for them to be able to finance these projects with ease. They don't. And access to finance in general seems to be a problem. And I don't see why entities should not have the opportunity to source funding from different sources. I don't see why there's a problem. We should allow the front runners, the first to market, to get that benefit. If they're willing to take the risk, they should reap the reward of being able to access different funding instruments that are out there in the country. At the point where we reach saturation, fine, where we find the structures and we actually reduce incentives where appropriate. That is how normal markets operate. So from our perspective, Chair, that's where we feel the biggest need for advocacy is. On the appliance labeling, obviously the advocacy will extend into broader society. There's a big energy efficiency campaign that will be supported by GIZ, and we'll be looking in particular, for instance, even at supporting Parliament in helping to green Parliament more, and in so doing, and perhaps the Green Building Council will, of course, work with that as one of their objectives as well, and help to profile what's being done there. But certainly there's a big campaign that's on the cards. So, Chair, it probably needs a lot more discussion, I think, probably outside of this forum. I think there are many things that need to be done, and I think the department's got a very good sense of what it would like to see Senedi EE doing. And we obviously at some stage defer to the department to actually comment on that as well, Chair. And just before I conclude, Chair, if I could just make a point about on the banks issue as well. that there are lots of little initiatives that are running. CTI PFAN, which stands for the Clean Technologies Initiative, which is under the IEA, Private Finance Advisory Network, provides support to project developers from Uganda, South Africa, and Mozambique to develop projects in the clean energy space. And they actually provide them with training so that you can actually develop your project to the point where a banker would actually take a look at it and understand it. And thereafter, they pay you up with potential investors to help finance the project. So there are initiatives like that, Chair, and part of our role is to bring, as a matchmaker, is to bring those developers towards those investors as well. Thanks, Chair.
Mama Wat.
Thanks, Chair. There were a few questions that were directed at me. One was about landlords and tenants and the complexity of the fact that for the landlords they don't really care and the tenants do, and how do you deal with that? So, I mean, I think that the Green Building Council will actually be better at answering this than I, but, I mean, certainly there's an indication and there is some analysis overseas that buildings that are more resource efficient are give much higher returns in terms of rentals and sales in terms of price of the building. So that is now, I think, becoming a greater motivator for landlords to actually ensure that their buildings are more energy efficient. They're also more likely to get tenants. There's this whole green leasing area that we have been looking at. I don't think that it's big in South Africa at all yet, but it is something that we need to really get tenants to be asking for. So that's really an educational process. That's a kind of behavioral change thing. One of the things, Chair, that I think is really maybe useful for South Africa to look at is, and we have tried to look at it in Cape Town, but it's hard for a city to do it. I think that it needs to be a national government regulation, is that, for instance, in Queensland, in Australia, with every sale of the house, the seller has to fill out a resource-efficient form. And they don't have to know all the answers, but it is obligatory to fill it out. So the form asks things like, does your house have a solar water heater? You know, what is the, you know, are there LEDs instead of CFLs, you know, and so on. So a whole lot of like, things about water consumption and so on. And I just think that that's such a necessary step for us to take. You know, we've got FICA now that prevents people getting bonds because they can't pay back. But, I mean, those people who are getting bonds are still getting houses that where the operational costs are so high that it's, you know, it's an unnecessary burden. And they don't know what they're buying. So it's a bit like an extension of the appliance labeling area. We do have a form that we developed when we were looking at it with the banks in Cape Town that I could send that might be useful to look at. So I would say that that could be national legislation around bonds. Then somebody asked, oh yes, about small-scale embedded generation. Look, it's a very good partner to energy efficiency, particularly in commercial industries, in the commercial sector, because you get power during the middle of the day, which a lot of commercial businesses can move their demand at peak into the middle of the day, but it's the same for households as well. So, you know, at the moment, PV is slightly too expensive for people to invest in, but very soon it'll be cheap enough for everybody to who's a sort of fairly significant energy consumer, even in the household sector, to invest in their own supply. But if we don't make it something that can work for electricity departments in terms of revenue, and if we don't make it possible in terms of allowing time-of-use tariffs for the residential sector, then it's just, you know, it's not going to happen. I mean, we're also shooting ourselves in our own feet, both of them. So I think that it's an area that national government needs to walk into and start to kind of open up. One of the big complexities is that you're not allowed to have time-of-use tariffs at the moment in the residential sector. Another is the smart metering that is really necessary if you have time-of-use. Now, national government did pass a regulation, or I don't know, an edict at any rate, that all municipalities had to implement smart meters by the beginning of last year. Well, I mean, I don't think anyone's done it. You know, I mean, certainly, you know, Cape Town tries to do it, get a bit smarter and a bit smarter. We have a major retrofitting of all the prepayment meters going on at the moment because, well, not right now, but it's about to start, because the old meters have been there for 20 years. So now we do have an opportunity of putting in smarter meters. But I think that it's, you know, it's something that we really need much greater support nationally for the municipalities around, particularly for the metros. I think that was everything. Yeah.
Smart concept, smart mechanism, smart strategy, department, Sanedi, department, Sanedi. At some stage, can you get something better on that? It's going to be unhelpful to get this in bits and pieces. Because everywhere you go, people buy into the concept of smart mechanism. If I can do, I want to use the broadest term. Of course, the smart metering, the smart this. But at the end of the day, I'm sure all the members, one of the things we'd like to see is, you know, is the way that where you see giant leaps in generating information, in generating data on both generation, consumption, energy efficiency, and the likes, you know. It finds or gets down to do whatever they are doing, but we'd like to see, you know, other metros. If it's metros, we have to pilot it, but let's see something being done on this. Because ever since I joined this committee, I know the department itself considers that in terms of data management, not just measurement, but just data management, right, generally. You know, South Africa is far behind, but then how do we plan, you know? How does our IEP become, you know, a formidable tool if we do not create that conducive environment for them? And correct me, I assume that the smart mechanism as a whole, you know, is going to be one of the pillars for you know, the initial molding and formulation of the first IEP, you know, and even its rolling out and management, you know, because we'll be able to measure, you know, right down to a household in the villages. I mean, not in nearby, but obviously the first target would be the large consumers, you know, both residential and in the economic side, you know. But it's just that I'm triggered and provoked by that. And before the department makes any comment, Honorable Makambi, you are welcome. First, I thought you were lost, but when I saw you asking for a document, I realized that you actually consciously came to join us. It's very good to have an extra member of parliament to come and support us, you know. Because it seems the issue of energy efficiency is seen as something that's high-flying, you know. It's our duty to make sure that people is part of our daily life, never mind the high English energy efficiency. It's just high English, but the reality, the practicality of it, you know, it's tremendous. Green building housing, you know, one thing that, I'm sorry, I'm off the tangent because there's a little bit of time. They said, In their calculation, shall I say green design or energy efficient designing, you know, or efficiency-based designing implies just an extra 3-4% in the current conventional costing in a building. I'm looking at you so that I'm not inaccurate. And the argument that Green Building Council is that, look, we need to lobby and campaign and create that awareness that compare this extra 3-4% in terms of the savings you'll be doing down the line. Those are some of the practical things now you see beyond this high English word, you know, energy efficiency. And it struck me, and as experts, I don't have any reasons to disbelieve them or to be suspicious, you know. But as you know, human beings, we said, oh, 50 million or 70 million building house, I mean building or any property, that's too much. I mean, 3-4% 5% of it becomes quite sizable. But the thing is, what are the benefits, you know, out of that? You know, so I trust and hope that must have been the impact on all of us, one of the members and others today. Memo, do you say anything to say before we close?
Thanks, Chair. Let me just comment on, there was a question from the city of Cape Town in relation to the solar water leasing program clarity.
Can you be close to your microphone, please?
Okay. We dealt with that question in the morning. I did indicate that we have been receiving questions or clarity seeking emails as well as letters in relation to how do we select. And also, there was a question in terms of whether one municipality should apply for two programs, the EEDSFM as well as the solar water heating program. And the answer you got was you should apply for one. And I need to reiterate the point that, yes, you need to apply for one. Why is it so? The problem is the budget. I did indicate that I would have, I mean, been happy to see National Treasury being in this house as well, to hear what the members are saying, as well as the cry from the public. The kind of allocation that we're getting is very small. The pie is just too small. It's a drop in an ocean, and we have got more than 200, I mean, like municipalities. And you ask yourself, how easy is it to make sure that each municipality, being a metro, being, I mean, like the most rural municipality, gets to be energy efficient, because that links to the question of 49M. That, I mean, is an outreach to all the citizens, irrespective of how big the municipal jurisdiction area is. At the moment, the reason why we're concentrating on one program per municipality just to make sure that we try to diversify the little resources that we have. But we take the concern, we will also convey it to National Treasury in terms of getting increase when it comes to EEDSM allocation, irrespective of whether it's solar water heating program or the street traffic and lighting program. I also need to touch on the point of the standard and appliance labeling program. Let me just acknowledge that there were delays in terms of rolling it out, but at the moment we are just, about to kickstart in a more robust way, because we are just finalizing the appointment of the project manager. You would know that this program is in collaboration, it's a JEF-funded project, which we do with UNDP as well as other role players. The project document, yes, was signed in 2011, but like we had delays in terms of the appointment of the project manager, but that it's now being finalized, and you will see, visibility in that regard. So maybe I need to add that it's not only within the South African space that we take note of the importance of that program. We also received support from the U.S. Department of Energy in terms of providing expertise or skills through capacity building on the experts that have to be dealing with the laboratory issues or testing centers in terms of the appliance and labeling program, and we have acknowledged and thanked the support in that regard. And there was a point that Salga raised earlier, which I think maybe I need to touch on before we close, in terms of the responsibility of implementing the standards and building regulations. That one, we do acknowledge that at the moment, as the law states, yes, it's within the responsibility of the municipality. We, at national level, we had to reflect and see that there is a problem when it comes to capacity, hence the legal opinion on how best can we improve, implementation when it comes to the building sector. And we're looking at two pieces of legislation, the standards and, building regulations as well as the Energy Act. And I think that would guide us in terms of how best it should be done. On the role of SANEDI, I think
think the CEO has touched on the mandate as it is, but he did indicate that there was bad in the indication. So I think I'm not in a better position to conclude on what my remark would be, but I'm taking it very serious. I will elevate it for further engagement if maybe there is no clarity to Sanedi on what they need to do. And also maybe I need to touch on the point that I'm a board member for Sanedi, which maybe in my capacity as a board member, I haven't had the seriousness of not being aware of what needs to be done. But I'm also taking that on a very serious note. I will, in my capacity as a board member as well as an official of the department, elevate it for further engagement so that we clear the gap or the impression that could have been created. Thanks very much for all the comments that have been put forward today on energy efficiency. Thanks.
No, thanks a lot. But just bear in mind that on Sanedi issue, it's particularly from my side, that we are provoking it. In fact, someone from the department said, referred to Sanedi as NEEA as a regulatory put any agency, you know. And so when references are made to advisory and advocacy, you know, one is bound to react, because I said, but there was someone senior from the department who said regulatory. Now those are two different, probably linked pillars, but you know, it would be helpful. But as I had said, you know, what if out of this whole engagement, you know, this then provokes, you know, the need to even remote, you know, a refined, you know, mandate of Sanedi EE. Remember the back of our minds, the honourable members. One of our concerns is the fragmented approach to energy efficiency. I mean, it's glaring even today. In fact, it's even more glaring. And we cannot sit and fold our arms and not try to make creative means to address that. And there must be a balance, you know, as we move along the way between mandatory issues, which are mainly driven by regulation, and voluntary issues, which are done through persuasion, stakeholder engagement, you know, lobbying, advocacy, you name them, incentives and all of that, you know. But at the end of the day, you must see and we must be able to witness an epicenter somewhere. You know, it may leave the various players in their own sectors driving energy efficiency, but what's also vital, you know, whatever the case may be, is to see an epicenter somewhere, you know. I'm not even going to define how it is, but I think it's quite imperative that we should have an epicenter, you know. As they always say, the center must hold. Mama, you want to say something?
I'm afraid I do have to say something, but I'm to request that the DOE send a formal letter to the mayors of municipality.
That's not for the consumption of this. We can handle that after the meeting.
Then I will just say that EDSM and low pressure solar water heaters have little to do with each other. Low pressure solar water heaters are not an energy efficiency intervention, they are a health and service delivery intervention. So I think that for Sanedi, this is an important area for them to look at, because if municipalities are having to choose, then basically we are choosing against energy efficiency and pursuing service delivery, and that's important for this committee to know.
I hope our research and content advisor taking note of that. Somewhere, I remember or not remember, somewhere someone did challenge this issue of energy efficiency on solar water heaters. Not only you, but there was, I think, in the first round, you know. That's why I'm saying that I would like us, Ms. Watt, to take note of what you are saying, you know. It cannot be repeated without ensuring that. It doesn't have to be resolved by the committee, but we've got to ensure that somewhere it is resolved and we clear, you know, where exactly is the issue of solar water heaters located, you know, or how is it defined, viewed? Is it defined as an energy efficiency drive or whatever else it is? But let's flag it for now. It's important. Honourable members,
Honorable Mtambi, I'm sure you and I will be, with great excitement, take some of these issues to the Pan-African Parliament and even to the AU Commission, because one of the things we need to be clear is that we need to influence also our neighbors. Even if their consumption of energy is still at a low stage, it's good. They are inefficient consumers in any case. So by the time their economies grow, they should grow as energy efficient consumers, not so. I'm just provoked by Honorable Mutambi being a member of the Pan-African Parliament. It's important that we also look into that. My closing remarks are that one of the things, that is one of the questions that come into my mind, with a lot of things that have been raised, how do we rate energy efficiency? Do we see it as one of the national priorities, particularly at this juncture in our country, with all sorts of pressures, both internally, economically, and also globally? I leave that for everybody to answer, because those, I mean, we are disciples, converted disciples, who are really appreciating of the fact that driving energy efficiency by every millimeter has got tremendous benefits and effects, you know, down the line. But we're not the only one in this journey. There are lots of others who have also to buy into this and ensure that we have the requisite either support or funding on it. Other members, there have been quite a lot of things that have been raised, even new things as well, you know, your grain of your procurement. I trust and hope we're aware that also what mention has been made of awareness campaigns. I don't think the awareness work is that penetrated. Let me then bring this meeting to a close. Let me thank everyone, even those who have left. In terms of future, I think we need to still think a little bit more circumspect as to whether we have to have a third leg, but also we have to be guided by the department, because we don't want to create a parallel process, because quite a number of things that have been raised here are triggering the need to go further. There are a number of institutions which may have been helpful for them to have shared their inputs from us. They range from the Bureau of Standards, DTI, National Treasury, some universities, JSE, GCIS, the international component, the financial sector, transport, and a couple of major SOEs, your Transnet and others, who are major users of electricity. I mean, I'm just, you know, Transnet just, that comes up in SAA, you know. So they need to share with us what exactly are they doing in their head, and is what they are doing such that it would influence the refinement of the energy efficiency strategy, because that's our focus at this stage in time. It's not that one is oblivious of that, but every little act that someone does has got a potential at times to influence refinement of any strategy or policy. On those words, thank you very much. For those of us, we'll still be meeting honorable members tomorrow to get the report from the task team in preparation for us to get ready for the going back to the small bill processing. Mre.
Chairperson, my apologies for coming in at this late stage. It's Honorable Slough's birthday today. Yes, just retirement day.
No, not that one. He is just mellowed. He has just mellowed. You don't know how a couple of phone calls that we have, I have with him at night discussing energy things and some other stuff. We still expect quite a number of good things from him. The OLD part, no, I'm sorry. I think he should replace OLD with MELLOED. That's it. Heavy AP, comrade, heavy AP. I don't know where the cake is. Thanks very much. The meeting stands adjourned. Thanks very much, people.